Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter since 1987, editor of PWTorch.com, MMAtorch.com, and PWPodcasts.com, and also host of this, the PW Torch Livecast. I'm on the air live every Monday right after Raw, every Tuesday, like tonight, right after SmackDown. Every Wednesday, midday, starting at 1 Eastern, 10 Pacific for the midweek flagship. Tomorrow, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net is my guest co-host, so join us tomorrow. And then Thursdays, same time, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific for Interview Thursday. And this Thursday, really long time wrestling announcer, the longest running active wrestling announcer, at least among them, Mick Karsh joins me. Longtime friend. I've known him since the 1980s. He's a former Pro Wrestling Torch columnist, former announcer with the AWA on ESPN when they did those TV tapings out in Las Vegas at the Showboat Pavilion, and among other TV taping locations. Still active on the indie circuit, former president of the Nick Bockwinkel fan club, and so much more. Mick Karsh. He still follows wrestling scene today and has strong opinions on what's going on today. He brings his lifetime of perspective and his wit and great stories to the live cast on Thursday. So join us then. It's always good when Mick stops by the live cast. It's been too long. I look forward to that on Thursday. Then Thursday night, Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek take over with the post-Impact show as soon as Impact goes off the air Thursday night on Pop TV. Tune in live at pwtorchlivecast.com. And then Friday, it's prime time, 7 Eastern. Torch senior columnist Bruce Mitchell is joined by his co-host Rich Fan for an hour or so of conversation with a weekend review and a preview of the weekend, including Sunday's Payback. And there was a lot of Payback talk on today's episode, tonight's episode of WWE SmackDown live from Des Moines, Iowa. And we're taking your phone calls and getting your thoughts on tonight's show, which started with Shinsuke Nakamura making his first full-fledged interview segment for the main roster on SmackDown, interacting with Dolph Ziggler. We ran a poll on Twitter over at PW Torch, at PW Torch on Twitter. I asked, what'd you think of it? Thumbs up, thumbs in the middle, thumbs down. Right now with 530 votes in, 39% thumbs down, 32% thumbs in the middle, 29% thumbs up. Now, that's pretty divided. I mean, a little more leaning towards thumbs down, but a pretty divided reaction. And I expect if we talk about that on today's show, there'll be some pros and cons that we'll discuss. I certainly will. The main event feels like the official turn of Charlotte. Babyface turn of Charlotte. Last week, some people were thinking, yeah, it seems where they're headed. Others are like, no, I don't see that at all. That doesn't make sense. She's such a good heel. She's taller than everybody else. It just makes sense for Charlotte to remain heel. There's some good feuds for her, Naomi and Becky Lynch among them, but it actually looks like now Naomi, Becky Lynch, and Charlotte will be the three main babyfaces, Carmella, Natalya, and Tamina, the three main heels on SmackDown, with Charlotte challenging Naomi for the championship. It ended with the three heel women running in and attacking both women and standing tall at the end. And by the way, Natalya's music playing, which is the right thing. Tamina and Carmella, her juniors in terms of just about every category. So Natalya, now the lead heel on SmackDown in the women's division. Charlotte putting over Natalya in an interview that we chronicled at pwpodcast.com. I encourage you to check that out. It is a tons of content every day covering with in-depth written recaps of wrestling personality hosted podcasts, Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, on and on, and also newsworthy quotes that wrestlers utter on interviews. And Charlotte put over Natalya as the one who put her on the map and really took her to the next level. And Natalya looks like she's going to get a shot to be the top heel now on SmackDown. So that bookended SmackDown. That gives us a decent amount to talk about just on those two segments alone. But we can talk about everything in between, including Jinder Mahal running off with the WWE World Championship belt in a giant white stretch limousine. He stood out of the moon roof, held the belt in the air, and yelled in celebration after attacking Randy Orton with help from the Bollywood Boys. And now Randy's going to have to fight to get his belt back. Or WWE is going to simply tell Jinder, you are fired unless you return it. But that would be too easy, right? So that won't happen. You can check out my detailed report on SmackDown at pwtorch.com. I encourage you to do so. As Raw airs and SmackDown airs every Monday night and Tuesday night, I'm covering the show with a written report with analysis throughout the report. So check that out if you want, maybe either before listening to the show or to fill in some thoughts and details on the shows after you listen to the show. All right. Our phone number here is 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. We're going to take calls. I'm hosting solo today. Yesterday, by the way, last night, Pat McNeil joined me for well over an hour and a half of Raw analysis. We had some really good callers, some good conversation on that show. And we hope to continue that today with more good conversation. So be part of that and join us, 515-605-9345. The phone lines are filling up. So get in line early or forever. Hold your peace. And why don't we begin our phone conversations here with Mike from Boston. Mike, you're up first. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight after tonight's SmackDown?
Hey, Wade. Hey, before I say anything, I got to let you know I had a choice to make tonight. And I think you're going to like the choice I made. I had enough discretionary income to buy one T-shirt. And it came down to a PW Torch T-shirt or a jokey WWF shirt with one panda hitting another over the head with a steel chair. Wade, I chose the PW Torch T-shirt.
You are a smart man. That's absolutely the right choice. There's nothing about glorifying concussions about wearing a PW Torch T-shirt, Mike.
No. Panda on Panda Crime, though, is pretty fantastic, but figure I got to support the site that I write for.
Absolutely.
I thought this was a much better show. So anyway, I thought this was a much better show than last night's Raw and last week's SmackDown, even though it was kind of a repeat of last week's SmackDown. Kind of like one long mulligan. But overall, it's much more entertaining. I just wish they could get some of the finer details right. They're going to turn Charlotte babyface, but I, as a fan, still don't have a real reason to cheer for her as a face. Between her promo last week and her backstage segment tonight, she's done nothing so that she's a babyface. She's still really smug. She's really arrogant. It's basically what she got is she got a beatdown from three people. She's probably, if she hasn't bullied them pre-roster split, would bully them in the past or would bully them in the future. And I thought it said a lot that, you know, there's no Becky Lynch running out to make save, which seemed like the logical thing to do if you're going to completely turn her face. There's just, you know, aside from the fact that she's great in the ring, there's no real reason as a character to cheer for Charlotte Flair, the character.
I'll give a couple positive notes on this, just to put it in context for those who didn't see the show too, and then I'll react to the overall context. Becky Lynch, when she was interviewed, was asked about Charlotte, and Becky said her relationship with Charlotte is complicated, to say the least. In other words, some good, some bad. And you can tell she's kind of hedging. If Charlotte was going to be the number one heel, ideally Becky would be like, she walked in here to SmackDown and thought she could just take over and rule this place. And I'm not going to let that happen. And she's arrogant. She thinks she's better. But she didn't do that. So she kind of hedged a little bit on her negativity towards Charlotte. And that kind of foreshadowed a little bit perhaps a turn coming up. And I think by having three heels, essentially, I don't know, I don't want to overuse the word because I don't want it to lose its meaning, but bully Charlotte a little bit. They were the kids at the high school who are in control. They're the clique, and Charlotte's the new girl in town. And they were felt threatened by her, and they sought strength in numbers. They tried to recruit as many people as they could. So it does create some sympathy for Charlotte. So from a pure storyline standpoint, Becky not completely discounting that there might be some redeeming qualities to Charlotte. She said, I don't like how she goes about business, but I have to respect the success that she has, the results that she has. So there was some hedging there. They set it up nicely in that sense. Becky not running out for the save. Yeah, I think the issue, if Becky ran out for the save, and this is where you can kind of weigh the pros and cons, is would Becky run out to save Charlotte? Would she be first in line to do that? Or would Becky think, nope, Charlotte wouldn't do that for me. I'm not going to do it for her. Then you sort of set up a storyline where Charlotte's got to earn Becky's respect and trust again. Charlotte has to show Becky Lynch she's worth risking her hide in order to save from a beatdown. And also, I mean, it's sort of a booking philosophy to have the heels stand tall at the end. And if Becky ran out, then you would have three baby faces and three heels, and it becomes tougher then to give that the fans that sense of, boy, if Charlotte and Naomi can line up and get on the same page and they can talk Becky into joining them, then these heels, this established clique of heels won't have the advantage anymore. And I think they want to draw that out a little bit. So that's my case for why they did what they did. And I'm largely okay with all of the choices that they made, but I think they arbitrarily could have made some different choices. I just think the pace of things is suggesting that's why they did what they did.
Okay. I mean, hopefully they're, because she's been the top heel female competitor for a long while now, there's a lot, I think there's just some work that has to be done, and it doesn't seem like there's been a lot of groundwork yet, but you're right.
Yeah.
There's hopefully a much larger story they're going to tell. On another note, I'm actually in on Jinder Mahal at this point as a potential champ. I'd much rather see a guy who, and I do like that SmackDown is built, taking the time post-WrestleMania to build up some new talent, give some guys that haven't had a lot of success maybe a second chance, not only with Jinder, but also I think what you saw with Breezango tonight, not only winning, but winning in about 2.5, 5 minutes and 26 seconds, whatever it would take. People have kind of stuck with Breezango for some charisma there, even though there really hasn't been much reason to. And, why not take some time and really build up the mid-card between now and in SummerSlam and see if we can get a few things, different things going. That's only going to strengthen the product. I like what they're doing with Jinder. I see a guy that's actually trying to build a character there as opposed to Randy, who looks, I think he looks about as interested as you and I would if we were standing in line at the bank. And, that's me. I think you're seeing it. That's why the guy's not main eventing. He's kind of an afterthought at this point. So I really do think, at least with Jinder, they're trying something. And that angle with him just kind of riding off in the back of the limo, holding the belt up, and, I said he needs to eat a little bit more fat and maybe, skip a workout or two, because there's such a thing as being too muscled up. But in a suit, he looks the part of a champ. He looks the part of that guy who's at the top of the card, holding on that tight. He looks right. So I'm for giving this guy more of a chance than just, we need an opponent, one pay-per-view for now. Now you're going to go back down the bottom of the card. Give him a few months. If he's not going to beat Orton. We know that he's not going to beat Randy Orton in a month. I mean, it's just not going to happen. But, don't push him all the way back down. Let's see what we can make of this guy in the next 6 months. At least the guy seems invested in what he's doing. And he's been great on talking spec.
Let me jump in. Because I agree. I mean, when you compare his enthusiasm for what he's doing to Randy Orton, there's someone. And by the way, it's interesting. JBL saying it was 15 years ago today Orton debuted on the main roster on SmackDown. That is good fact. And Randy's been through a lot, and Randy looks like he's done this a lot. Every day at work is a rather forgettable going through the motions day for him, where he can kind of get by in that way. I think with Jinder, there is a sense, there is hunger, there is a desire to have 1/5 of the success of Randy Orton. If he can have a 3-year run on top, I think Jinder will work hard for that, where Orton is at a point where, you know, he's been there and done that in every way in WWE. And he's expressed he wants to be around for a while longer, but I think he wants to be around for a while longer being the B-minus player. I'm not even sure that's wrong. I mean, it's not ideal if you're WWE, but I think he's going to do his best to stay healthy, not get hurt, and just be a valuable, you know, top three face or top three heel on the roster and be serviceable and get that kind of legacy star reaction. You know, I mean, good for him if that's what he wants to do, but I'm going to call a spade. He's not exactly energizing the show with his performances, and Jinder does. The issue with Jinder Mahal isn't that we don't want new people to get a push collectively. I think people who were kind of scratching their head at his win last week, the issue is how it happened. How did it come about? It came out, kind of happened out of nowhere. And I think that's the issue that I had, is I wish that they had shown that they had planned this for a few months and that Jinder got 2-3 wins of significance before winning the six-pack challenge. It would have helped that the six-pack challenge included wrestlers who seemed more deserving of being in a title shot too. So Jinder actually beat, quote, somebody of significance, or, you know, outlasted a few other big names. So I think a lot of circumstances and booking led down what may or may not turn out to be a worthwhile push. I just haven't seen enough from Jinder on the mic or in the ring to rule in or rule out that he's a top guy. But I'm, like a lot of people, fine with the opportunity. Triple H, we have quotes up, by the way, a nice story that USA Today did with some quotes from Triple H. We've got highlights of that, some Triple H quotes, and my analysis of that at pwtorch.com right now, with Triple H talking about Jinder's good attitude, his desire, his expressing his desire to do whatever it takes to move ahead and setting a really good example as far as that goes. Not sure that's, I mean, I get Triple H being the accessible media guy, putting a positive face on WWE booking and wanting to explain why they do things the way they do. Not so sure that you want to be putting that out there when you're trying to get Jinder over as a heel right now, that he's a really good hard worker who says all the right things and does all the right things. But I understand people have to, you know, separate the context of an executive speaking about booking decisions on a newspaper and then divorce themselves from that when they're actually watching the guy and resenting him. And fans, you know, watch wrestling on different levels. But nevertheless, you can check out those quotes and read more about it. He also talks about Drew McIntyre and how former three-man band members are now on the rise on the main roster. So, yeah, I just wish they had done more with Jinder. Mike, we got to go to our first break. Any quick closing words from you before we do?
Yeah, just before you on break, I'm definitely on board. As I wrote last week, get rid of the six-pack challenge matches. Have an 8-man tournament and have them have 3 good wins in a row. Do that.
Absolutely.
That'll give a guy a build. You have 5 weeks between now and the next pay-per-view. So, Wade, always a pleasure to talk to you, and I've got an email to drop you regarding column. So I'll continue to listen. Thanks, man.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I touted Mike's specialist column on Twitter last week, and I think you all should check it out. He did some really good work. I said it was a good example of writing, I can't remember my exact wording, but it was an example of not of being critical of WWE in terms of a critique without being overly negative and not also being an apologist or excuse making. Because I think sometimes there is some that there's a sense of, if you don't just accept everything that WWE does and cheer them on for the great work that they're doing, and that you're not just constantly positive, that you're, you know, that you're, quote, hating on something that you love. And I think there's nothing that you can do more damaging to a genre you love than to sell it short, to hold them to a low standard instead of a high standard. And I thought Mike's column called The Creative Corner. You can go to pwtorch.com, click on the specialist category, and scroll down to The Creative Corner. There's a really good write-up on the number one contendership match and how it should be determined in pro wrestling. Mike inspired to write that after last week's six-pack challenge. All right, I'm behind on my first break, so we're going to do our first commercial. Oh, Mike did bring up T-shirts. And do want to let you know that while this commercial is airing, you can go check out pwtorchtees.com. That's pwtorchtees.com and order your Torch t-shirt. There's four colors, four logos. Check them out right now. Order one and have it by the end of the week. That's pwtorchtees.com.
Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the livecast. Thank you.
All right, I'm back. I'm Wade Keller. This is the PW Torch Livecast Tuesday night edition following WWE SmackDown. And we're talking SmackDown. If you've got thoughts on tonight's show, Shinsuke Nakamura's debut, are you thumbs up, thumbs in the middle, or thumbs down? We have a very split reaction in our instant Twitter poll. You can follow us on Twitter at PW Torch. You can follow me at The Wade Keller. And you can follow our sister brands at MMA Torch and at PW Podcasts. Speaking of which, right now at pwpodcast.com, tonight the latest recap is a detailed rundown of Steve Austin with Diamond Dallas Page, talking about the WWE Hall of Fame experience, who else he considered to induct him, and how he motivated a major star for WrestleMania 33. Full details, 1 to 10 score on where the show ranks in terms of whether you should prioritize it to listen to or not. Is it a top-of-the-line show or skippable? And some bullet points at the top with some more details underneath, including handy timestamps. We also have last week's PW Torch Livecast Interview Thursday guest, Matt McCarthy. His podcast, We Watch Wrestling, episode or issue, as he calls it, issue 190, features discussion on Vince McMahon's love of big wrestlers, House of Horrors fears, Shibata, and more. We've also got Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson on the Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, Edge and Christian with Eric Young, Chris Jericho with Rico Constantino, Eric Bischoff talking about the state of Impact Wrestling, some rosy memories, and why Jinder Mahal may be getting a big push. Also, something to wrestle with Bruce Pritchard talking about Owen Hart's career, his feud with Brett, Owen's infamous ribbing. Also, X-Pac, Sean Waltman, friend of the live cast, interviewing Damian Sandow. All those and much more. In fact, I got to mention the Ross Report, too, a summary of Sean Tavari and Ken Anderson on the Ross Report, talking about their wrestling school, but also talking about ribbing and how they stood up to ribbing and hazing in WWE. So all that and so much more. Check it out, pwpodcast.com. Every single one of you should be checking that out every day on your smartphone or desktop or laptop. I know I do. I look forward to seeing what Andrew has posted every day with the wrestler quote highlights and what our great volunteers are doing in terms of summarizing the wrestling personality hosted podcast that you might not have time to listen to all of all the time. Back to the phone lines we go. Let's move to Daniel from Alabama. Daniel, welcome back to the live cast. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I appreciate you welcoming me back. The thing that bothers me, I believe, is I was really enjoying SmackDown several months ago, and it seemed as if, and the ratings said, that SmackDown was taking Raw's place as far as popularity. So because obviously they have more time devoted to Raw, they did the shakeup. And I believe that the shakeup did nothing but take a few of the SmackDown feuds, such as The Miz versus Dean Ambrose, move them to Raw, and really move the ladies around and put James Ellsworth in. And now SmackDown, I mean, with the exception of Nakamura, which I think is a good thing, is becoming Sunday Night Heat. I mean, what is your thoughts on why they stripped down SmackDown just to make Raw? I mean, and it doesn't seem like Raw has gotten any better. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I just disagree with the premise. I think that the trades were equal. I think that SmackDown might have even gotten the edge in the when you consider the NXT call-ups and the existing roster changes. I think they ended up about as equal as they were before it all started. I mean, Kevin Owens is a great acquisition for SmackDown. He can carry a lot of segments. He's good on the mic. He's good in the ring. Shinsuke Nakamura, top level acquisition for SmackDown. I'm looking forward to seeing what, well, I'm a little fearful, but also looking forward to seeing what they do with him. AJ Styles, heavily rumored, if not outright reported, heading to Raw, stayed on SmackDown. Same with Randy Orton. You have Ty Dillinger added to the mix. Sami Zayn added to the mix. Rusev, he hasn't been active yet on SmackDown, other than a brief vignette, or a little pre-recorded talking segment. But he's going to add a sense of depth to SmackDown. He's really talented. Jinder Mahal getting a push, and as Mike, our previous caller, said, this might work out well. He might prove to be worthy of this spot, even if he didn't get a great build-up. And New Day haven't even arrived yet. I mean, all in all, and heck, Mike Bennett and Maria, we're reporting, are likely headed to SmackDown from Impact Wrestling and Ring of Honor. So with all that and Charlotte being added, I don't see it as any kind of tipping of the scales. To me, it seemed like Vince McMahon treating his two kids pretty equally. I just say keep in mind that we haven't seen Rusev yet, and Nakamura is just getting started, and New Day haven't been on the show yet, so it feels a little stripped down, but I really disagree with the idea that this was somehow a clear victory or even any kind of a significant victory for Raw. And I just think we kind of maybe have to judge it fully once we get past Payback, Daniel, because I think this post shakeup ambiguity with different wrestlers on different brands or on both and, you know, finishing up some feuds is causing a little confusion, and it just things aren't quite settled yet.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree once you put all of those pieces into place. The problem is, how long will it be? You know, if we look at the vignettes of Emma, and of course that was way overdrawn out, and you say, well, how long is it going to be for New Day? Is it going to be another month? Is it going to be another 2 months? Tonight, you know, Rusev mentioned Money in the Bank, so is he out another 2 months? Charlotte's a good addition, and of course AJ Styles staying. I'm not sold on Jinder Mahal yet. I think that he is basically someone that they are putting in place just to give Randy somebody to compete against that gives them a little like you had mentioned earlier. There's been no backstory to build up Jinder to make him be someone who would be a viable champion. It was just out of the blue. Last week, everybody was talking about. They could not believe that he was the one. And now that he is the one, you know, it's still kind of unbelievable. Now, here's my other idea, and I know it would never happen in a million years, but I know that Vince listens to your podcast religiously, and so I want to make sure that he has a chance to hear this.
Of course, yeah.
They've taken the cruiserweights, and they've given them their own show. Why could they not take the women and give them their own show, who is wildly more popular than the cruiserweights, put the cruiserweights, sprinkle them around or whatever, amongst the two shows, and then let the women have a show. Do you not think that would be wildly popular? They could go out and even get some more independents like Santana Garrett or some of those that, which I know she's been on Impact recently, but some of those that are good workers, good quality workers that could really, help the women go along.
There are pros and cons to the way that WWE is handling the women's divisions and the tag team divisions and the cruiserweights. It's not fair to talk about the one side of the ledger without acknowledging what you'd be giving up on the other side. And I think that's what Vince McMahon and company did. And they're in this, had the same discussion about should there be two world titles or one. If there's one world title, people are against it, have some really good arguments about what the drawbacks are. People who are for it have some really good arguments for it and what would happen if they didn't take that approach. Same thing with the women. They want to have women on every house show. And they want the house shows, once we get past this weekend, to be brand specific and brand, you know, so that the wrestlers from Raw are on Raw house shows, and same for SmackDown. So they want to have women on every show, women wrestlers. They think that helps demographically bring the women out. It helps bring the men out. It helps bring the kids out. They want to have that mix. They don't want to give that up. So they also, if they put all the women on a separate show, then do they arbitrarily split them in half and just have some wrestle on Raw and SmackDown? I mean, you could do that, but it kind of muddies the split of the rosters to say, well, the men are each brand specific, but the women just kind of float around on different brands. So that's one of the drawbacks.
Right.
I mean, I think there's a number of pros and cons. I really am fine with the choice that they made. I think they could probably make it work in other ways. But Daniel, they want women on both TV shows, wrestling, and they want women on each of the house shows every weekend. Logistically, I think what they're doing is the only way to make that work without some pretty big compromises otherwise.
Well, one other question. Do you think that they could ever do a women's only pay-per-view?
Well, they could do a women's only special on the network and combine both brands. You know, they could kind of have a women's WrestleMania type show where maybe they have some, you know, an inner brand or two dream match and build up to it and settle it. And I think it would be interesting for them to test the numbers, you know, to see how that does against
sure.
compared to an NXT TakeOver special or just kind of an off title pay-per-view, you know, a payback or something like that and compare numbers. I think it would be an interesting experiment. But they might find that.
Bring that up with Hunter next time you have lunch.
Okay, I will. Daniel, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Good points, good conversation, yep.
I appreciate it, Wade.
You bet,
right,
thank
bye-bye.
You. All right, I was a little late with my first commercial. We're past the bottom of the hour. So if you want to get in line on the phone banks, the number is 515-605-9345. Let's get right to break number two, and when we come back, more of your phone calls.
Do you love pro wrestling, Torch? Then we've got another show just for you, Ring Rust Radio.
Ring Rust Radio breaks down the hottest topics and news from around the wrestling world, including WWE Raw, SmackDown, and pay-per-views, TNA, Lucha Underground, New Japan, and indie wrestling. Add in interviews with the biggest names in the industry, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Paul Heyman, Kurt Angle, and many more, and Ring Rust Radio has something for everyone.
Check out the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Interact with us on Twitter at Ringrust Radio and email us at ringrustradio@yahoo.com.
All right, I'm Wade Keller. We're back. This is the PW Torch Livecast. If you're not a VIP member, you can get over a dozen other VIP-exclusive podcasts every week, along with ad-free versions of the livecast every single day with the plugs also edited out. So all the livecasts with the ads and plugs edited out and over 12 other podcasts per week, VIP-exclusive, all available to subscribe to on popular podcast apps on iPhone and Android, iTunes, and more. Plus, you can stream them right from our mobile site, pwtorchvip.com. When you go VIP, you get access to an ad-free, slick mobile site that gives you access to all the content on pwtorch.com every day, but ad-free with even better-looking layout and access to our VIP audio shows to stream right from that site and also access to our archives and exclusive articles. We'll have columns posted this week, VIP-exclusive columns from Sean Radican on the reclassification of pro wrestling on YouTube and the ramifications of that. Bruce Mitchell on Roman Reigns. Travis Bryant, I think I know what he's writing about, but I haven't received it yet, so we'll see what that is. And Greg Parks with a review of several slightly off the radar WWE Network specials. All of that and more exclusive content every week. Those columns and much more. Every Saturday, we put up a new 20 years ago back issue, some fascinating things in the latest 20 years ago back issue, including it was actually 20 years ago this week that Steve Austin, and it was in the WWF Newswire, Steve Austin, I think this was in back issue number 437, if VIP members want to look this up. Steve Austin was a ratings difference maker. Raw beat Nitro in a single quarter hour for the first time in a long time, and it was buoyed by Steve Austin's growing popularity. It's really interesting to track 20 years ago, week by week, every Saturday morning, a new back issue, and its original PDF format plus an all-text format, which is very easy to read on mobile. It's fascinating to track the developments, the ebb and flow of the Raw versus Nitro war. So much cool stuff. Just those back issues alone, I think for a lot of you, it would be worth the VIP membership, reading that every weekend and reliving an amazing, fascinating era. We had tons of behind the scenes news, fascinating Torch Talk interviews, in-depth coverage of the Raw, Nitro, WWF battle. That comes with a VIP membership, plus our old retro radio shows, Pro Wrestling Spotlight, hosted by John Arezzi. New episodes of that go up every Thursday night. So check out bullet point details and ordering information and testimonials from VIP members if you need a little more convincing at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Like I said, ads and plugs edited out of the live cast, which, again, that alone might be worth the VIP membership for many of you. All right. Up next, let's go to Chris from New York. You're our third caller of the day. Chris, what's on your mind tonight following SmackDown?
How's it going, Wade?
Good.
I thought SmackDown was okay. It wasn't, I don't think anything really stood out to me, but it was an okay show. I thought it had a really good ebb and flow. The matches were okay. One thing I want to talk about first is Jinder and his promo that he cut. I get they're trying to build him up as, you know, this the foreign heel gimmick and everything, and I just felt a little bit disappointed just because I think that there's so much for a guy in his position to be angry about. He's been overlooked, he's been ignored, he's been given crappy opponents, crappy teammates and gimmicks and opportunities have that just been avoided him. I don't understand why they thought that the foreign heel gimmick is something that should, maybe aid his anger. What did you think about that?
I felt like when he got to the part about because I look different, even he looked a little uncomfortable. This is a guy with a high-level college major and degree, born and raised, I think, in Vancouver, British Columbia. His dad's from India. He's from British Columbia, Canada. He's not any less North American than anybody else that he is supposedly, you know, his promos are written for and aimed at. I agree. I think he's, when he talks about being more cultured, I think he should talk about being more cultured, more handsome. He can't say genetically gifted because that's kind of Charlotte's shtick, but you know what I mean? Like, play into, I think Jinder's whole gimmick, and he should come from not looking different from an ethnic standpoint, but really kind of obnoxiously shoving it in people's faces that he's more self-disciplined. And, you know, if he really hung his heel heat on being over the top and abrasive about how he exhibits self-discipline that the fans clearly don't from looking at them, look at his physique, look at his education, look at his pedigree, look at his accomplishments he can't go too far here because some people don't like that in management, but saying no connections, no family connections, getting his start in red. Like he can tell all kinds of stories where people are kind of going, you know what? A lot of that's true, Jinder, but man, are you obnoxious and full of yourself talking about it. And that's enough. Not everybody who isn't in the Western European ancestry of Vince McMahon needs to have their wrestling heel gimmick be based around that fact that they're not. So I'm with you. And I feel like every time he gets to that part, his promo is less believable. I think he's probably not enthusiastic about interjecting that. And frankly, it's only a slice of what he says in his heel promos this week and last week. I think they can take it out and he'll be just fine. I think there's plenty there. Now, when people say I'm not sold on him yet, or hey, everyone, give him a chance, I think everybody should be in a wait-and-see mode. I think you can be critical of the lack of long-term planning with booking him. I think the booking did not serve him well by not planning this out a month or two ahead, giving him a couple wins on TV, planting those seeds, creating this undercurrent of, he seems to be on the rise. You can say being paired with Rusev was helpful a little bit and making him seem like more than just a jobber. I would have liked to have seen significantly more than that. The booking didn't prepare people for this. But yes, no one should be saying, he's going to be a big star. He hasn't shown that yet. But nobody should be ruling him out yet either. I think he deserves a fair chance once we get past the initial shock and disappointment and the lack of buildup leading up to getting a push. It's also possible he loses to Randy Orton and he's a mid-card guy. You know, when you look at the SmackDown depth chart, there's not a ton of heels above him right now. It's just Kevin Owens, Baron Corbin, and Rusev. He can be a top four heel. I mean, Dolph Ziggler, I think, is and shall remain a notch below him. Same with Eric Rowan. The only person who might leapfrog him is if Mike Bennett indeed debuts on SmackDown, and that might knock Jinder out of the top four. But, I mean, just take a wait-and-see attitude. I like seeing a fresh not a fresh face, but a fresh push to somebody who's been around a while. I think it sends a message to the rest of the locker room that if you do the right thing, if you work hard and improve yourself, there's a chance for you to move up. You know, you're not stuck forever in the mid-card, in the mid-card era. So in a way, I think, you know, you kind of want to root for Jinder to succeed, but he has to earn that success on merits, performance in the ring and on the microphone, and then you just hope the booking is up to it. Chris?
I think you're totally right, and I think you have to give this a chance. I understand where people are coming from, where they talk about his ascension not being all that logical because he has no credibility. And I think that's a tough pill to swallow for fans who would like to see just plain old continuity in their wrestling. It's a tough pill to swallow for them because now they have to accept that, you know, Vince can do whatever he wants. He can book whatever he wants. He can push whatever he wants. He got any sort of angle, do exactly what he wants. He doesn't have to do what anybody says, including the fans, and he'll still make $900 million a year. I think that's tough for certain fans. But what you said about Jinder, I think he won that match that he had, the number one contender match. There was no clear winner in that match either. You know, none of those guys should have even been in that match, let alone won it. So now he has his opportunity, and I think it's good to see him taking, you know, full use of it. And I think his thing with the Bollywood boys, I think they call it like the Singh brothers or something now.
The Singh brothers,
I think that is something that is probably be one of the more interesting things on SmackDown because it's new. It's different. We haven't had a strong stable on Raw SmackDown in a while. So I think that's going to be something that people should look forward to.
Yeah, I'm with you. Good points, Chris. Anything else on your agenda tonight?
Yeah. Just two more things. This, the second to last thing is this thing with Kevin Owens and AJ Styles. That's one thing that I think they should be doing a lot more with. I feel like maybe they're planting the seeds a little bit, but I think they're still focusing on, you know, Jericho and Kevin Owens, which, I mean, you know, I know it's happening at Payback this Sunday, so they can really go into it. But I think that has the potential to be a really top feud on SmackDown. But one thing I wanted to bring up about that is I noticed Tom Phillips who said something about Kevin Owens versus Jericho, and if Jericho wins, he joins Kevin Owens on SmackDown.
Correct.
I think it was last week or the other week, 2 weeks ago, where they said the winner gets the SmackDown spot. So what exactly is the stipulation?
Chris, I heard it 2 weeks ago, the same as I did this week, that if Jericho wins, that because he's U.S. champion, he'll move to SmackDown, but not that Kevin Owens would leave.
I mean, maybe that's just how I interpreted it. Because I remember they saying I think it was Daniel Bryan who said whoever wins the title gets the spot on SmackDown. So I figured it would be either Kevin Owens or Jericho.
Yeah, it's possible Daniel Bryan misspoke. He was probably thinking about fatherhood, so it's possible he messed that up. But I think what I've remembered and noticed has been pretty consistent in simply saying that Owens is property of SmackDown, but the U.S. title is also. And if Jericho wins, he moves to SmackDown. The whole thing's a little clunky, but that's how I've consistently seen and interpreted what they said.
And the last thing is the end of SmackDown, it ended with several of the women's wrestlers coming out and interrupting Naomi versus Charlotte. And I have no thoughts on that. I don't know. I didn't see the logic in it. I don't see what point they were trying to get across. Where do you think they're going with that angle? Where do you think is the direction that they're thinking of taking this? Do you think there's going to be some sort of stable, or do you think this is just like Charlotte's face turn, or like what do you see them doing with based off what happened at the end of SmackDown with the women's wrestlers?
Yeah, Chris, I don't have a ton to add to what I said at the top of the show about it. I mean, I think we see three heels align, and likely Charlotte trying to earn the trust of Naomi and then Becky Lynch, and that'll be your top six women on the brand. I don't know that it'll be a faction, although, I mean, I'm not against Natalya being a faction leader, I guess, but I could also just see this lasting only a little while and then each of the three heels kind of moving on to their own feuds. And I think we'll see a Natalia-Charlotte main roster feud. Then I think Becky Lynch and Carmella probably make sense. And then Tamina and Naomi I could see working. So I think they'll probably split off in three separate feuds, three separate directions. All right, let's go next to area code 313. I think the Detroit area. Go ahead and state your name and the city you're calling from. Go ahead, 313. Going once. Going twice. 313. All right, if you're about to be hung up on, call back, and we'll try you again. It was a first-time caller, I believe, so maybe he or she got nervous. By the way, women are welcome to call. We get women callers sometimes. Demographically, I don't know if it's accurate, but our internal charting of listeners indicate a lot of you who listen are women. A surprisingly large percentage of you are women. Call the show. Don't let me scare you away. Don't let our co-hosts, I mean, scare you away. Give us a call. We always like to hear from all voices and perspectives on this show, whether you agree or disagree. There's people who, like, you know, on Twitter get all like argumentative about certain things that I say, and I'll engage on Twitter with people if I think they're being sincere. But it's like, there's a show here. If you want to have a talk beyond 140 characters, call the show. You know, if you got a strong point of view, let it be heard. Let's hear it out. Sometimes you can sway my opinion. I'm certainly not against hearing another point of view. All right. Well, let's do this. We've got four or five people on hold. So we're going to get a number of calls. And I do want to let you know, too, that we have an email address. So if you want to respond to something I've said so far on the program, you can do that also, or just pose a question or topic you want to see addressed if you can't call the show. That is pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. That's pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. We're going to take one more break here and come back and hit two or three more calls in the next segment. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch Livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. All right, we are back, and we're going right back to phone calls. 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345 if you want to get in line on the phone banks. Up next, Hayden in Kansas City giving us another call. Thanks, Hayden. What's on your mind tonight post-SmackDown?
Oh, not a whole lot, actually. I'm actually sitting down right now watching the ending of 205 Live. It's actually a very interesting end. We just had Austin Aries come out in street clothes and attack Neville from behind as he was attempting to do something to Jack Gallagher after the show was going off the air. Other than that, I'm actually really interested and curious as to how there's such a division about this episode of SmackDown. It's obvious that there was some things that some people liked and some things that some people don't like. I think the biggest standout in the situation, is judging by not only just your callers, but from what I'm seeing on social media, is the people thinking about what, like, their personal opinions on Jinder Mahal. It's obvious to me personally that there are some people who really just don't want to take him seriously, and there are some people who are trying to take him seriously, and it just isn't. They aren't mixing very well, and I was just curious as to what you might think is the issue behind that. Is it them just seeing him as a loser for so long now? Is it WWE putting him in this position, or is it?
I'm
curious as to what you thought.
I don't think it's a single thing, but I think being a jobber and then not having any booking support or any significant booking support to explain that suddenly he's now worthy of a number one contendership, I think there are people who are pro SmackDown, defenders of SmackDown, who don't want to have the perception be that post superstar shakeup, SmackDown got stripped of enough contenders and top wrestlers that now, out of desperation, they're pushing Jinder Mahal. I mean, this is not new. I mean, Black Bart became the top heel in World Class Championship Wrestling / USWA. I think it was World Class still at that point, when they lost all their talent. And, you know, there was an exodus of talent, and Black Bart didn't have – they didn't book him to be credible and a top-level guy. He was no Stan Hansen in terms of, you know, having a reputation in the ring or on the mic. He was good on the mic. He was passable in the ring, but he wasn't a top guy. And that didn't draw. People didn't buy him because he wasn't quite at that level. He hadn't shown himself to be at, and the push kind of came out of nowhere. This isn't like – and that's back in like the mid-'80s. I mean, this is not new. Deciding to push somebody new for reasons that aren't long planned out long ahead and aren't based on the fans deciding ahead of time. I mean, that was what was happening 20 years ago. You know, Steve Austin, I think when he was on was maybe his first live cast interview, we did a show talking about a stretch of time very specifically in his career and marched through when the fans started to get behind him and how he reacted and the promotion reacted and how his push was organic. And people wanted to see him on top. And that's what was happening. You know, that's what's happening 20 years ago. We're chronicling it in those PW Torch 20 years ago back issues where all of a sudden people started flipping who liked Nitro more than Raw started flipping over to Raw and staying because Steve Austin was on. This is more Black Bart than Steve Austin when it comes to Jinder Mahal, but this has happened before and it's worked out too. It's going to take some time. So with Jinder, yes, it's the lack of booking support. It's the fact that he's been on TV nonstop. It's not like he went away and proved himself like Drew McIntyre, Drew Galloway, and put in some good work overseas and an Impact. There's a feeling of, all right, you got a lot to prove to us. Until then, we're going to be skeptical that you've earned this. So, I mean, I think it's fair. I think most people are being fair, but I also think it's people who are kind of scoffing at it. If he comes out and delivers good promos and some good matches, they're going to accept him too as a star at this level, but he's got to prove it. This isn't something where you're just entitled to it because they decided to put you in that spot. He's got to earn the respect of the fan base. If he has it in him, he will. If he doesn't, he won't. And I think that's kind of where people are right now.
Yeah, that all makes a really large amount of sense. And to continue off of what you finished off on there, it's just, if he does keep putting forward these very decent promos and these very exuberant character moments that allow people to get a glimpse as to who he is, I think they'll be able to bond with him much better. I think if he keeps doing what he's doing, people will be much more willing to accept him more. And I hope for the best for him. Obviously, the more stars, the better.
Hayden, before you switch subjects, I'll also say, I think that some people, and this was addressed in the USA Today article, some people think he's getting a push because of his physique. I mean, there's no doubt. You know, you lose the kind of weight that you do, and you look the way that you do. He looks so different than he did. I mean, look at his Wikipedia picture. It's not even the same person. He looks different than he did a year ago and 2 years ago. Some people are thinking he's getting rewarded just because he's, you know, eliminated carbs and hit the gym, and he's Triple H's kind of guy in that respect. But I've seen enough guys with good physiques not get pushed. So I think there's more to it. Triple H made his case in that USA Today article that we've got a link to on pwtorch.com. I have my analysis of that up too. I think Triple H made his case, and you know, this isn't a guy who's a problem. This is a guy who behind the scenes wanted to grab the brass ring, and they're rewarding somebody for conducting himself the right way and aspiring and making a case for a bigger push. And I think WWE wants to foster that mentality behind the scenes and reward it.
I actually do agree with the brass ring statement. It does seem like he's working very, very hard. It's very interesting to me that out of all of the people who have been working very, very hard behind the scenes, it's Jinder Mahal who would be the one to be noticed. Other than that, the only other thing I was going to bring up is and it's kind of related to the same subject, is with the Jinder Mahal situation and the rest of how the fans have been reacting, a lot of these really strange, kind of out of nowhere results, especially with the Breezango thing tonight, even though I do feel like they deserved it. It does seem to me that this superstar shakeup was planned, as according to a lot of reports I've seen from other wrestling sources, that this was planned on very, very, very short-term notice. And I was just curious if anyone else was getting that same vibe from all this. It feels very disjointed. It feels very much like what one of the callers previously had said, like they just swapped people around on brands but didn't want to disrupt the feuds they were having, so they brought the same people up who were already in feuds and just had them on a different show.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think the shakeup, I think Vince McMahon did not want to lose the momentum of WrestleMania. I think he looked at post-WrestleMania and saw some doldrums, saw a chance that there would be a drop-off in interest, that there would be a lot of network cancellations post-WrestleMania and TV ratings drop-offs. We have results up at pwtorch.com regarding Raw. You might see figures and numbers out there other places. I encourage you to check out my reports on pwtorch.com. I've got a spreadsheet, and I really put the numbers in perspective from a year ago, 10-week trend lines, hour-by-hour numbers, percentage drop-off in viewership from hour one to hour three to try to put a handle on whether what they hyped for the main event throughout the show helped retain or grow viewership or turn people away. A lot of details in a pretty concise report at pwtorch.com. So I encourage all the listeners to check that out. But there was a drop-off this week on Raw. I think Vince was fearful of that happening sooner. So the shakeup happened sooner than was penciled in. But what that did is it led to, yes, this transitional phase that's disruptive and confusing. I mean, I'm watching Raw. I still have to think kind of hard about, wait, which brand is U.S. title on? Which show is Jericho on? Is Orton going to Raw or is Bray going to SmackDown? Oh, wait, Bray already went from SmackDown to Raw. Like, it's confusing. And I talk about this and write about it and think about it constantly. So the average viewer, the casual viewer is probably confused too. Let's get to next week, because that's when Payback's in the rearview mirror. And I think things will settle down then. New Day will show up. The Rusev thing will play itself out. I just think we need, and you know, it doesn't hurt that Dash got hurt and it messed up a little bit going on Raw too. You know, presumably a revival Hardy's feud might've been in the works that got thrown off. So it's been a strange 2-3 weeks, but I think it's I wouldn't say a necessary evil, but just a side effect of, again, weighing the pros and cons of waiting or doing it quickly. And they did it quickly. So there's some negatives. I think we'll be fine by next week.
Oh, okay. I sure do hope so. And I also do very much agree that Payback is hopefully the last thing that we get that is of the old guard. And
yes,
with the Go Home show, technically this week was interesting in its own way that it had two Go Home shows, because it's for a brand specific pay-per-view, we had two Go Home shows because we're having superstars from both shows go to this pay-per-view. And so hopefully this disjointedness will disappear and go away. I just hope for a little bit more consistency from the going forward.
Sure.
Other than that, that's all I had for you.
Good talk to you, Hayden. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Wade.
You bet. Thanks. All right. Let's go to Darrell in Georgia. Darrell, you're up next. Darrell, what's on your mind tonight?
Oh, not too much, Wade. How you doing tonight?
Good. Do you want to watch Becky's promo or Becky's interview? I don't want to interrupt you talking smack in the background there.
Oh, no, I know. It's okay. I got the cast.
Okay, good.
You know.
I got my eye on it, too.
But,
yeah, I heard her in the background there.
Yeah. SmackDown was okay. I'm still giving the shakeup at least 4 weeks, at least to after the first 2 weeks after the first pay-per-view of each shows happened, to see how this goes and just see how they do everything. But with Shinsuke tonight, I like how they introduced him, you know, the little skit and stuff. I wanted to hear your ideas on what you thought about them bringing him out, and you finally see him do some type of contact with another wrestler, not in a dark match.
Yeah, I'm surprised we haven't, I mean, it's just happenstance, I guess, through the calls we've taken, that there hasn't been more discussion on this. I'm more concerned than optimistic about the opening segment with Shinsuke. I would have rather led with Shinsuke doing his thing on his ring entrance. Basically, show him doing what made him famous and appreciated and adored and worshipped to a degree in New Japan. have him come out to the ring and do his ring entrance and then kick ass in the ring. Don't just say he's strong style, show it. Don't draw a ton of attention to him being quirky and odd and different. Don't overtly compare him to Michael Jackson. It's so Vince McMahon to look at somebody and go, well, this is what people are going to see, so let's talk about it nonstop and make that look like it's something we're creating or putting out to people that they wouldn't have noticed. It's like Shinsuke's going to sell himself as this guy you can't quite figure out, but his number one trait can't be that he's this kind of weird, oddball, quirky, Michael Jackson acting Japanese cultural anomaly. He's got to be the first and foremost a badass ass kicker in the ring, who then you get to know as not being typical when it comes to his personality and having a charisma that's hard to categorize and hard to compare to others. And after a few weeks, maybe bring up, there's a little Freddie Mercury, a little Michael Jackson, a little Mick Jagger. Don't just do Michael Jackson alone, because he's not a Michael Jackson imitator. He's either going to make him seem like some Elvis, some cheesy honky-tonk man doing Elvis. He's not that. He's his own guy. So you can say, sprinkle in a little Mick Jagger, little Freddie Mercury, a little Michael Jackson. Pick out, you know, three or four rock stars, because he's a rock star. But sell him as a rock star, not a Michael Jackson impersonator who talks funny. They should have shown him in the ring doing what he does first. So that's my stance. Now, I wrote this on my PWTorch.com SmackDown report tonight. I'm not super worried about Shinsuke not getting over. I think he's somewhat Teflon. I think he's somewhat bulletproof, Terrell. I think he can survive an early misstep. I think 2 months from now, what happened out of the gate won't matter as much. But that said, I'm a little more nervous than I wish I was. You know what I mean? I think some bad judgment calls were made. I thought the whole middle part of comparing him to Tito and Janet and the monkey reference and all this, it was the writers, again, at their worst. It's dated references. It was filling too much TV time. It was this obligation to fill TV time. So, I'm in the thumbs down category about what they did. I thought that there was some good at the beginning and the end. But overall, I'd have rather just seen Shinsuke come out and frame him as a dominant in-ring force and make it secondary and almost to cure it. Like, they built up to Goldberg getting interviewed. You know, Goldberg, I don't know how many weeks it was and how far along he was on his winning streak before Gene Okerlund interviewed him, but that was a big deal when they interviewed him. And granted, Shinsuke has the NXT history and they've, you know, it's not like he's this new guy who's never talked, but we're like Goldberg was. But still, I would have rather had Shinsuke wrestle a few times and build up to the interview, because his personality is expressed so successfully and effectively through his ring entrance and what he does in the ring. But it's better spread out and interspersed with hard-hitting moves. When it's just all there and him just kind of being twitchy and making his funny facial expressions and body gyrations, it's a little too much of one thing without the main thing that's going to get him over, which is his in-ring work. So, again, thumbs down on the opening segment, but I'm not ready to write it off as some disaster, Darrell.
And exactly everything that you said, I agree with. But I wish that what you just said is what they had JBL say on Talking Smack to a point. When they was having him talk about Shinsuke, and they were saying, he was comparing him to The Undertaker, and Undertaker being getting the character of The Undertaker. But they said if you put somebody like Shinsuke and you ask somebody to draw him on a piece of paper and what makes him, you can't do it. He's so unique. And that's what something they should have had him say out there, or at least had somebody say that out there instead of all the outdated stuff, because that's something new, different, and something people can relate to. And it also, you know, a lot of people like The Undertaker and will understand the character even more when you compare it to a character that people like. Understand? So I get it.
Yeah.
But my one last thing for you, Wade. After this Dolph Ziggler match that he had with him, do you think they should push the pedal with him? Because after you have that first match, you want to get him up there and try to push him up there to the main event quickly, or should you slow play it and allow them to have even more time to have missteps and stuff like that.
Regarding who?
With Shinsuke.
Well, I guess I didn't. I'm. Give me the question again, Darrell. I got a little confused when you were asking it.
Okay. After the Dolph match,
right?
Off
yep.
you. Do you feel like they should push the pedal with him and go ahead and shoot him to the main event, or slow play it where they could have
gotcha.
More
okay.
missteps like tonight?
Okay. Yep. No. It's good. For some reason, I thought you were talking about Dolph at first, and then I thought somebody else, and then the pronouns got me mixed up. Darrell. I think they should. Build him up. So now I'm splitting the difference. I don't think you should shoot him right to main events, but I don't think that you should put him on simmer for a year either. I think have him have a good match with Dolph, have Dolph make him look like $1 million, won't be hard, and then move up to that next level pretty quickly on the depth chart. And I think a feud with, I mean, really you can pick a lot of, I mean, Rusev, Owens, Corbin, those all work. If they want to feed him Jinder Mahal after the Dolph Ziggler feud, that would be a chance, an opportunity, if Jinder Mahal has it in him, and I don't know that he does, we'd find out, to have some really good matches with Shinsuke, even if he lost, and help put Shinsuke over, but maybe earn respect from the fan base by having some good matches with him. It's what they're trying to do with Roman, by having Roman have good matches with all these different, you know, world-class opponents with a variety of different skill sets. Maybe try that with Jinder next, Jinder coming off a title shot. And but, you know, I mean, if he has a 2-week TV feud with Eric Rowan in there, I'm not going to complain. I don't know that you want to start with Mike Bennett and Shinsuke, because I don't think people know who Mike Bennett is enough at that point. But I mean, really, he can do a program with he shouldn't do a feud with Ziggler that lasts as long as some of Ziggler's more recent feuds have. This shouldn't be a Miz Ziggler thing, in other words. So but Rusev. Maybe Jinder, but Rusev, Baron, or Kevin Owens all work. I mean, I think for sure we're going to get a Kevin Owens-Shinsuke feud, and that's going to be really fun. And then at some point, hopefully we get a dream match with AJ and Shinsuke in a WWE setting. All right, Jason in Australia, hold on. You are on deck next, right after this commercial break. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week, and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. All right, we are back. I'm Wade Keller. This is the PW Torch livecast post-SmackDown edition. Tomorrow, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joins me on the midweek flagship. We've got a lot to talk about here in the post-WrestleMania, post-shakeup season. And Jason is always a great, it's always a great show when Jason is on. Just got an email from Steve D, who is from Pittsburgh. He said that AJ Styles is gold. I have a smile on my face every time his music hits. I'm interested in everything he does. But number two, Randy Orton. It's completely the opposite. While I respect everything he's done in wrestling, I'm just bored with him. I go get a snack anytime he's on, or I go right to my phone. Three, I hated everything about Dolph's promo with Shinsuke. Same old, we don't understand you, Mangle. I thought Shinsuke was foolproof, but I'm not so sure. I'm certainly not giving up because I'm a true fan. So that's kind of a feedback to kind of tie into what Darrell and I were just talking about. And lastly, I'm really interested to see where they're going with the women's division. Regardless of if Charlotte goes face or Becky goes heel, it's very compelling. Most of us know that Charlotte and Becky are friends in real life, disregarding WWE's social media policy or lack thereof. I'd be interested either way if they got those two on the same side. So anyway, those are his thoughts. Yeah, I mean, I've pretty much covered all of that so far on the show, so I won't react too much to it. But let's bring Jason onto the show. Jason, good to hear from you again. Your thoughts on tonight's SmackDown?
Yeah, thanks, Wade. And first of all, I'm also calling on behalf of my wife. So you've got a female caller as well as a male caller. So I'm just trying to build that quota there for you.
Thank you, yes. All right.
Just doing what I can, you know, 12, 13 yeah. hours away from you. Anyway, as far as SmackDown is concerned, you know, I find it interesting. I would prefer Randy Orton to have the United States title, feuding with Jinder Mahal, and realistically, it should be Kevin Owens, AJ Styles, and Baron Corbin in the world title scene. I mean, we saw how the United States title really rejuvenated John Cena's career. It could have actually done something for Randy Orton. And in my mind, I don't think Randy Orton has actually held the United States title before. So it could have done something for him. And then you could have had Jinder Mahal feel like he's on a natural progression. Maybe he wins the United States title. And then perhaps if you want to progress to the world title scene. I have to say, though, as an Australian and, you know, someone who's not American, obviously, and I'm sure your guys are sick of it, I'm just tired of this whole anti-American angle with the heels and the whole, like, the heels, we can't understand, you know, like, foreigners, we can't understand them. I'm just tired of it. To me, it's the lowest common denominator stuff. I mean, I am enjoying Kevin Owens saying he's the face of America. I do get a kick out of that. And it makes me believe that we may be going down a path of Shinsuke Nakamura and Kevin Owens in the future, and Nakamura like showing his face as if to say, you know, I want to be the face of America. We could have a bit of fun with that. But to me, Wade, do you see what I'm saying? To me, it's just lowest common denominator stuff. Why is Canada versus USA? We've been there, done that. Canada doesn't hate USA, vice versa. I mean, why do we keep going to this?
It's weird. I mean, it's part of a long story tradition in pro wrestling. I think they think it's an easy way to get some heat. There are enough fans who participate and get going with USA, USA chants, but they go to it. Jason, I'm with you. I'll take a moratorium on it. I'd be very content if WWE and all of pro wrestling just went away from it for a few years and challenged themselves to come up with other techniques. You know, if you've got your favorite frozen meals that you throw in the microwave or things you throw on the stove to eat and you're in a rut, say, anything I've eaten for the last month, I'm not going to eat. And I got to force myself to make some new meals and try some new things. And then all of a sudden you end up discovering all this food that you just by default weren't eating because it was so easy to just grab the same things from the grocery store or order the same things from the restaurant. That's what WWE needs to do, is just get out of this rut of that as the go-to angle. And I think accentuated with Rusev and what Dolph did with Shinsuke and Jinder, at least with Dolph and Shinsuke, one, I guess, sort of redeeming quality is that the heel was the one who was being xenophobic and making fun of the Japanese guy. And it was kind of, I mean, it was sort of funny at the beginning when Shinsuke almost said nothing and Dolph goes, oh, nobody understood what you said. That was all Japanese. Let me translate. And then he, you know, talked for 8 minutes. It's like the opposite of the USC translation interviews where the fighter gets interviewed afterwards and he talks for like 3 minutes and then the translator talks for like 20 seconds or 12 seconds. They're like, and Joe Rogan will kind of be like, okay, that was a pretty concise summary. This was sort of the opposite. Dolph extrapolated. He unzipped, he unpacked a lot. But that was, you know, obviously the joke. I'm explaining the joke. But at least the heel was the one who was the butt of the joke and being the one who was looking at the other culture in a way that was unfair. The Jinder thing, and even to an extent Rusev, although it makes more sense with Rusev, I don't think it helps. And like I said, Jason, have you sensed when Jinder gets to that part of his promo, his heart sinks a little bit? Like, I kind of wish I wasn't doing this aspect. I could be reading too much into it, but...
Well, I don't think you are. He's obviously a very intelligent guy, and I think he feels that this is lowest common denominator stuff here. I mean, can't I say something else? Can't I get heat in some other way? Must I refer to myself as being better than Americans and all the rest of it? I'm just, you know, it is World Wrestling Entertainment. I mean, I know WWE doesn't really stand for anything, those letters anymore, but, you know, you've got to think about people around the world that are watching this. I mean, I've got, when I see it's an America versus Mexico thing or Canada, I'm just like, really? We're going down this path again? You can't get heat in any other way, like break a guy's leg or hurt his ankle or something? That would get me more intrigued. Look, as far as American Alpha is concerned, I wanted to touch on what you and Todd Martin talked about on The Fix, and you posed a question to him. The reason if they aren't getting over, is it because of the writing or is it because of American Alpha? And, you know, look, I tend to go more with the talent, like 9% of the booking. I don't see what they have possibly done wrong, American Alpha. And then had that feud with the Usos. They got a bit of heat on Chad Gable, but then, you know, only a couple of weeks later, they'll force the team with each other for that stupid Survivor Series match. So straight away, they got undercut by the booking. They're tremendous athletes. I'm not sure what more they can do in a heavily scripted environment. I just tend to focus more on siding with the talent. I mean, you look at a guy like Braun Strowman, when the story's told right, guys can get over. I feel like they've been way more hurt by the booking than themselves. I just don't see what more they could possibly do.
I agree. I mean, I think sometimes you have to say, all right, the booking is the problem, but given the hand they were dealt, could they have done something better with it? And I think there's room for that. There's room for that critique, but I think that the primary issue is with the booking. It's the lack of Vince McMahon understanding what their shtick is, joining it midstream, and the lack of backstory that took – I don't want to go over the whole thing again, but I think to understand and have an affection for the dynamic between those two, you have to have seen Jordan play off of Gable and Gable play off of Jordan for months in NXT to kind of get where they landed. And if you just see them now, it is just kind of this blah, athletic, smiling tag team. And you don't – there's not enough there. And WWE booking, it's a challenge. NXT is its own territory, but it's a territory that is considered part of the narrative of the main roster for the most part, not entirely. And they're not being served by that because Vince doesn't want to repeat what in the territory days would have been repeated. In the territory days, you have a whole new audience, and they would have said, all right, let's reintroduce this gimmick, and they would have started from scratch. But they feel awkward doing that when, you know, NXT's on WWE Network.
I will say this, just regarding the tag teams, I think most people would agree that the two tag divisions across both shows, I don't think it's working. You know, I mean, the SmackDown tag division, they didn't even get a slot on WrestleMania. We all know it's just, you know, treated as well as Raw's. I mean, you know, what I would like to see is I'd actually like to see the tag team division go completely to Raw. So, you know, you have a few more tag teams. We have one solid tag team division with 10 great tag teams. And what you could potentially set yourself up to is a big money match. Arguably the two greatest brother teams of all time, which could be promoted, the Hardys versus the Usos. You could have a unification match where the Usos actually win that. The Hardys go their own way and get to be singles, and the Usos could be the dominant team on Raw. I would prefer to see something like that. Like, just cut their losses. It's not happening on SmackDown. Let's have one solid tag team division and get something out of it.
I mean, I understand it, but I'm not as hung up on the lack of depth in the tag division, because I think some of the best tag team feuds and the biggest drawing tag team feuds have come in tag divisions that were four teams deep or three teams deep sometimes. Or, you know, where there's two primary teams, there's the champions or the lead baby faces and two heel teams that kind of rotate battling them. The Road Warriors didn't have, when they were in the AWA as tag champs, they didn't have a long, deep lineup of challengers. They would feud with the Freebirds for a while. They'd feud before that with the Fabulous Ones for a while. They would feud with Crusher and Baron Von Raschke. But then they would assemble teams like Boom Boom Bundy, King Kong Bundy, and King Kong Brody, Bruiser Brody, Jerry Blackwell, Crusher Blackwell. They put Bundy and Blackwell together to say, all right, these two might be able to offset the Road Warriors. So you have a tag team that's the central figure, and you don't need to have a lot of depth. As long as you have a central tag team that's over, and you feud them with tag teams that are over who are the opposite of them, a face or a heel team. I don't think you have to be 6-7 wrestlers or teams deep, but the key is if you only have three significant tag teams. So right now on SmackDown, they have the Usos, they have New Day coming in. They're not there yet. That makes the tag team division seem thinner. And then you have American Alpha, and they're trying to give a little bit of a nudge to Breezango and even Ascension, the way they talked about them, and giving a little push to Epico and Primo. But in terms of tag teams people are going to take seriously, it is just Usos, New Day, and American Alpha right now. And American Alpha is sort of on the cusp of not being taken seriously. They need to fix that. Just have three teams that are over, but then have singles wrestlers who pair up, because the tag team that dominates the division is chosen wisely. They're good. They're perceived by fans as a credible top tag team, and the tag titles are treated as important. And so it makes sense for two singles wrestlers to team up to try to take them down. Maybe that will be 8 months from now, Dolph Ziggler and Mike Bennett teaming up. I could see that. I think they might have good chemistry together as two singles wrestlers teaming up. You can have an odd couple pairing of Luke Harper and somebody. I don't know. I mean, so I'm not hung up on needing all eight tag teams, you know, the five strongest all in one division. And I think, again, Vince doesn't want there to be one thing that one brand is known for and another thing the other brand's known for. And there's pros and cons to that, Jason, but I'm fine with, I just, the answer to me, because they don't have strong tag teams and depth in both divisions, one, I don't think you need a lot of depth, and two, you don't fix it by just throwing all the tag teams on one brand. You fix it by doing a better job having three or four or five meaningful tag teams on each brand. That's so within reach, I don't think you throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak.
I understand what you're saying, but we are dealing with Vince McMahon, who hasn't had a history of really getting behind tag teams. We're lucky if he gets behind one tag team division on one show. He's not going to do it on two, in my opinion. And you talk about, say, a Dolph Ziggler and Mike Bennett pairing. That's a simple solution. You could have one tag team division on one show, and Ziggler and Bennett say, you know what, we want to team up and we want to go to Raw. And now all of a sudden you freshen things up. And if guys want to go to Signals, you might do a trade where they could go to SmackDown. All I'm saying is that I understand what you're saying in theory, that it worked back in the day, but we're dealing with, quote-unquote, a handicap with Vince McMahon's thinking on tag teams. We're lucky if he gets one tag team division right on one show, let alone two. So I'm saying, like, cut our losses. We work against the weakness and try and combine everything to make it strong on one show. Because I think that could do more. But you could go either way, but that's just my opinion on it.
Yeah, I'm not sure that whether he has two tag divisions with six teams in each, or one tag division with 8 or 10 tag teams total, he's going to do any better job. I don't think that putting them all on one brand means that he's going to give collectively any more attention to getting them over. I think actually having two tag team divisions forces him to give a little extra or give some latitude to the writing team to do what he can to get more than just one or two teams at a time over. He's kind of got to try to get four teams over at a time. So you got two teams on SmackDown. I just think structurally you're actually pushing Vince McMahon into going against his instincts better than if you just throw them all on one brand. And I don't think, because Vince, Bruce has said this, when I've said they should push the tag teams better, Bruce's like, well, they're not gonna. I'm like, well, that's fine, but that's sort of like telling a politician who lies all the time and you're critical of the lying. You don't get yelled at because you're pointing out the lies, because politicians lie. You should still hold them accountable for lies. And that's why I'm with the tag division. Just because Vince is the equivalent of a lying politician when it comes to believing in and pushing and tag teams and getting the most out of it, I don't think you give up on saying that's very attainable and it's not difficult and it should be something that he's criticized for not doing.
Well,
and I think we're both
saying, but to me, the proof in the pudding was that WrestleMania, they couldn't find a slot for the SmackDown tag titles. There's about 8 titles or 9 titles within the company. If you were to rank them from 1 to 9, I'd guarantee you the 9th one would be the SmackDown tag titles.
Yep. Well, do a better job pushing the Usos. Get New Day in the mix. Do a better job with American Alpha. Start figuring out their character. Team a couple singles guys together for a secondary tag feud. And they're fine. I mean, I don't think we're that far away from having each show with 2 different paired off tag teams. 4 tag team feuds all at once that people care about. I think they're trying that with the Colognes. But again, like I talked about last week, I think they needed that transitionary moment that we didn't get with Jinder Mahal either. I think it hurt Jinder. I'm not to change subjects. It's kind of tangentially related. Jinder Mahal, I think, is paying a price for the Colognes getting a push out of nowhere too. Because I think it created a perception of SmackDown got fleeced in the shakeup, and the roster's so thin. Now they're pushing the Colognes and Jinder Mahal. And I think if they hadn't done that on the same week, people might have been a little more receptive to Jinder too.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Wade, as always, you give me plenty of time to say what I have to say, so I'll let you get back to your other callers.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate it. Always good talking to Jason in Australia. That's going to do it for me. I got to wrap up this week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, which will be available for VIP members tomorrow. Like I said, columns from Bruce Mitchell, Greg Parks, Sean Radican, still expecting one on deadline here tonight from Travis Bryant. I'll have some writing that is exclusive to the newsletter also. So go VIP if you haven't gone VIP yet. So much comes with the VIP membership. You don't have to even care about everything that comes with the VIP membership to have it be worth your while. It's sort of like Netflix. You don't have to love documentaries in order to order Netflix. You might get Netflix just for the original series, or vice versa. You might get it just for documentaries. There's so much that comes with the VIP membership. The nearly 30 years of archives of over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, covering week to week, chronicling the wrestling industry, not just fascinating details like the turning point in the Monday Night War in the issue that we just put up last week, with Steve Austin starting to win some quarter hour ratings after a long streak of wins by Nitro. But you can go back deeper into the archives and go back 25, 26, 27 years and just read about house shows, WWF house show reports that we published in the newsletter. There's nowhere else anywhere where you can read in-person fan correspondent reports on house shows in the pre-internet era. The wording of our Torch readers, our Torch newsletter readers, back in the late 80s and early 90s, before the internet, people would handwrite, and I would retype or type up, and then a little bit later, after mailing it to us, they'd fax it to us when faxes got invented. It's cool to go through house show reports from different correspondents in different parts of the country, going to WWF, WCW, and other house shows. There's so much cool stuff to dive into when you go VIP. If you're interested in wrestling history, just taking a summer out and reading everything Bruce Mitchell has ever written on professional wrestling would be a tremendous education and compelling reading, as he has written about the top shelf issues in professional wrestling, the hot topics, the top controversies since 1990. They're just about all of them are available if you march through the back issues in the Bruce Mitchell section. So there's so many good reasons to go VIP. The archives are just one of them. Here's some more details on a VIP membership, and I hope you will give us a chance. And if for some reason you've had a membership and let it lapse, come on back. We're doing a lot of good stuff, including over a dozen VIP exclusive podcasts per week, along with ad-free plug-free editions of this live cast and our ad-free PW Torch VIP website. So here's some more details on other aspects of a VIP membership. And until tomorrow afternoon, 1 Eastern with Jason Powell, we hope you'll join us. Consider a VIP membership in the meantime. If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host 3 other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to pwtorchvip.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost 3 decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. Thanks to our callers, as always, and our emailer. Tomorrow, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net. Thursday, longtime veteran wrestling announcer Mick Karsh. He's worn so many hats in the pro wrestling industry, and he's active in the indie wrestling scene. He's following today's product. Should be a real fun conversation. Make it a point to check us out Thursday, either live or on delay. Then Thursday night, the post-impact show with Mike and Andrew. And then Friday, primetime Friday, with Bruce Mitchell and Rich Fan. If you want more conversation about what happened this week, check out the post-Raw show. Pat McNeil joined me yesterday on the PW Torch livecast post-Raw edition, and that is available right now. You can check it out at pwtorchlivecast.com. As always, you can find our shows on demand, our past shows, and find out when the next show is scheduled at pwtorchlivecast.com. Thank you so much, everybody. Follow me on Twitter at the Wade Keller, at PW Torch, at MMA Torch, and at PW Podcast. And check out pwpodcast.com for the latest detailed write-ups and highlighted quotes from wrestler interviews and wrestler-hosted podcasts. And thanks to Blue Apron, our sponsor this week. And until tomorrow, Wade Keller, signing off. This is Live.